Lift your head, weary sinner. The river's just a And it's another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. You can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and learn about us. A lot of things going on right now at Hope. I have some news that I'm going to tell you in the future, but just some things, some votes and different conversations have to happen before I officially announce that. But a lot of things happening at Hope Resource Center in terms of expanding and seeking to impact more and more people in this city, and we are certainly thankful for that. We're thankful for you. We wouldn't be able to do any of that without your support. We wouldn't be celebrating our 20th year without your support, so we thank you for that. Today, what I want to do, last week we had a guest. We had Stephanie Gray on who is from Canada and was talking about the work that she's been doing, and she's going all over the world speaking on pro-life issues, and she's a pro-life advocate and author. And so if you want to hear that show, you can find that on our podcast at iTunes or on our website as well, investinghope.com. Today, what I want to do is there's been some articles out the last couple of weeks about some progress in what I would say progress in science, progress in technology to point even further to being pro-life. So what we've been arguing for a long time is that life begins at conception, and that we're pro-life for a number of reasons. And a lot of folks have said, well, science says otherwise, but now it appears that science, that the science community is catching up to our beliefs. So what I want to read to you first is something that I wrote this week, and you can find it on our website. You can also find it at Pregnancy Help News. It's been at the CareNet blog. It's also been at lifenews.com. You can find it there as well. So I recently came across an article referencing a study performed by the University of Kansas on a fetus's ability to distinguish between languages while in utero. This article wasn't written by the pro-life lobby or a pro-life advocate. No, this article was written by a science editor over at CBS News who proudly calls herself a feminist in her Twitter profile. In the current journalistic and political culture that is littered with fake news accusations, it is truly a welcome sight to see honest reporting on studies that would dare point to the intricacies and truth of life in the womb. Pro-life advocates have spent years seeking to convince the world that life begins at conception. We have held rallies, paid lobbyists, opened pregnancy centers, and protested. This work has not been done in vain as we continue to see a shift in polls, but this work alone will not provide the ultimate shift in thinking. However, I believe that this work, coupled with scientific research and scholarship, will prove our original hypothesis to be correct. Life begins at conception and deserves, excuse the rhyme, our protection. We have seen a trend in studies over the last couple of decades as research continues to point to the importance of parents talking with their children by using an expanded vocabulary. This model of discussion in the home prepares a child's brain and proves to signal intellectual health for their future. It is remarkable to see that these studies on babies post-birth have now driven researchers to focus their study to the awareness of a fetus in utero. Pro-life advocates have argued for years that the only difference between an infant and a child in the womb is development, size, and proximity. This is oftentimes scoffed at by our detractors as they scream, "Well, but science." You see, the "but science" argument is a tired one and no longer produces helpful debate. And why is this? Because science is on the side of life, as we no longer are forced to wonder what development in the womb looks like. Because you can download app after app, or you could just visit the Mayo Clinic to learn about development. Regardless of where you choose to acquire the information, the truth of life in the womb remains. We know that our work is fruitful when those that make the "but science" argument are now being forced to attack the very science that they cherish so much. Pro-life advocates have believed all along that science would prove us to be correct. We knew this because of the evidence of life. There are approximately 4 million births every year in the United States. This doesn't happen spontaneously or in a vacuum. Every birth and every person we come in contact with daily points to the truth of life in the womb. You see, this is why we can make our case with confidence. Even the very existence of those that would disagree with us points to the truth of our beliefs. Now, we can argue on whether or not a woman's choice has more value than the actual life existing in the womb, but the argument on whether or not there is an actual life in the womb has, in my estimation, been settled. This is why the aforementioned article over at CBS News brought me joy. You see, it shows that there are researchers and journalists out there seeking to speak truth. They were not pushing a political agenda necessarily. They were simply letting the science take them where it may. Is it newsworthy that fetuses in utero are aware of and can distinguish between languages? This question is best answered by a comment left by a reader of that CBS article. And here's what they said. They said, if true, this may be a step towards determining exactly when fetuses become self-aware, which to me would be a devastating blow to the pro-abortion movement. Something of this magnitude might even change my mind on the issue. So here's what I say. Keep working, praying, and believing, and soon, I believe the tides will shift and the truth of and science of it all will align as abortion becomes unthinkable in a civilized society. And to steal a line from one of my favorite hymns, what a day of rejoicing that will be. You see, so this article comes out that the research is being done in Kansas, and they're saying, look, we have done studies, and we see this study after study in the 90s, late 90s, early 2000s, of when babies are born, when people say, hey, talk baby talk to the baby. What research has found is actually use an expanded vocabulary with your children, even at a very young age. And what that points to in these studies is it's shown that kids that live in homes where expanded vocabularies are used, even at an early age, it points to stronger brain development and more success intellectually down the road. And so these studies that said after baby is born, when you're holding the baby, to have an expanded vocabulary with that child, it made these researchers say, well, what if the fetus in utero, what if the fetus inside the womb is able to distinguish languages? And so they did a study on that. And what they found was that the baby inside of the womb would make a certain movement or there would be activity when someone spoke in a different language, so not of the native tongue of their mom. So what they're saying is, look, we've done the studying of post-birth. Now let's look at pre-birth. Let's look at the baby that is still inside of the mom. And these studies have pointed to that a baby can now distinguish languages. Now this is late third, in the third trimester. So this is, development. It's almost time to deliver the baby. But what that points to is what we have been saying all along. That is a child in the womb. And the only difference between a baby at third trimester and a baby at the first trimester is, again, size, development, and the proximity at that point is the same, but size and development is the only difference. The only difference between the baby when you take it home and the baby that's in a third trimester is size, development, and proximity. That's it. And so this study is very important. And what was interesting to me is usually when you see these articles, they have a gotcha moment, or they have they're always seeking to push an agenda. And what surprised me was this particular journalist, this particular author of the article, wasn't pushing an agenda at all. She just simply reported on the study. Now, some could argue, well, she used the term fetus and not baby. But ultimately, what she did was just say, look, a study has found that a baby in the third trimester can distinguish languages. She didn't say this is a cause to be concerned for abortion advocates. She didn't say this is a cause to celebrate for pro-life advocates. She simply reported the study. And I applaud that. Now what we've done as pro-lifers, we've taken that and said this is what that means. And pro-choicers will look at it and they'll deduce whatever they would out of it as well. But what I wanted to bring it up to you is to show you, again, we've been saying forever, for my entire life since, and even further back, you look back to 1973 in Roe v. Wade, you've had pro-life advocates in this country and around this world saying life begins at conception. And they've always pointed to, obviously, to Scripture for that. That's why we believe that there's a life inside the womb that needs our protection. And we believe the Constitution of this country protects that life. And we certainly believe it is a moral imperative for us to protect that life inside the womb. And we've also said science will eventually catch up to us. I look back at my grandmama who had multiple kids, never saw an ultrasound with her children. And now you have people that can get 3D, 4D images of their child. So virtually they can have selfies of their child. They know what their child's going to look like before they have their baby. That's how far technology has come since even 10 years ago. And so we've been saying, look, science is going to catch up. And so that's why it's interesting to me that many of us that stand for life in other areas of our life and of our politicking, people will say that we're science deniers. But in terms of life, we are saying, look, the science proves, the science shows, the studies, the research that has been done shows that is life inside the womb. So again, the argument isn't whether it's life or not. The argument now is, well, if regardless if it's life or just a blob of cells, that doesn't matter. What matters is a woman's autonomy in her body and whether or not she has the power and the right to end another life. That's now the debate that needs to be had. The debate whether it's a life or not is done. Scripture shows that. Science has shown that. And so when we come back from the break, what I want to do is I want to look at another article and more advancement in technology. And what we've seen is with this advancement in technology, we are starting to see that the true colors of some of the pro-choice advocates, that it really isn't about choice. It's simply about getting rid of and having the power to get rid of a life. And we'll talk about that when we come back. We say, only your bed, cover all lies, only your voice, strong enough to speak and raise the dead. Only your love is calling me, is calling me mine. Hallelujah, hallelujah. So the question is, have we seen enough progress with technology to get us to a point where our society and our culture would say, look, it's a moral imperative to do something about abortion. Life deserves to be celebrated in every stage. And my argument is, I believe that technology has advanced far enough for that. I believe that the Bible points to that. And I believe that as the months and years go on, we will only see further advancement. And so I don't know if you saw this, but last week we saw a possibility of, right now it's in its very early stages, but the technology, it appears that they have created artificial wombs that can actually be a safe place for a baby. In this case, it was a lamb. And so on Friday, there was an article published by Kristen Brown entitled "How New Technology Could Threaten a Woman's Right to Abortion." Now, from the title, one might suppose that some technological advancement promised further proof of the humanity of the unborn baby. After all, in just the past few months, scientists have shared some amazing discoveries, which we just talked about as far as languages and the ability for a fetus in the womb to distinguish between language. So this new technology that could threaten abortion rights, what is it? Well, proof positive that unborn babies feel pain? Nope. The menace is the development of artificial wombs. Now, again, it's in its early stages, but the technology looks promising. Scientists have successfully grew premature lambs in in a closed amniotic fluid circuit that closely reproduces the environment of the womb. After spending 4 weeks in these bio bags, the lambs show development similar to that of their in utero peers. 1 year later, the lambs continue to thrive with no known complications. Now, back in April, the same website published an article discussing these results, and they were raving about the potential. But since then, it has dawned on the abortion rights supporters that the advent of an artificial womb would destroy, quote unquote, bodily integrity. And with other technological advances already offering a window to the womb, such as 5D ultrasounds, many are saying and are clinging to the "my body, my choice." They continue to cling to that. But what if my body is no longer needed? That should be celebrated, shouldn't it? Yet it isn't. The artificial womb presents a peril, not a reprieve, to the pro-choice. Here's how Brown put it in her piece. The advent of such artificial womb technology highlights how fragile and dated much of the law surrounding the right to an abortion really is. Developing technology also tests the rhetoric surrounding the right to choose. A woman's right to control her own body is a common legal and ethical argument made in favor of abortion. Under that logic, though, the law could simply compel a woman to put her fetus into an external womb, giving her back control of her own body, but still forcing her into parenthood. So let that sink in for a moment. Abortion law is fragile and dated because while an artificial womb would give a woman control of her own body, it could still force her into parenthood. Stripped of its niceties, what Brown wants is constitutional right to continue with the abortion, or even if that abortion occurs, even if they're able to have an artificial womb. What Brown doesn't realize, though, is that there is already a constitutional right to a dead baby because abortion jurisprudence, while definitely dated, is not fragile. It is extreme. Brown's conclusion that an artificial womb threatens abortion rights flows from the false premise that once an unborn baby can survive outside the mother's womb, abortions are illegal in almost all circumstances. Here's her summary of the law. In 1992, Planned Parenthood v. Casey reaffirmed that viability is key in defining a state's power to regulate abortion. The number of weeks at which you can legally procure an abortion varies between 22 and 24 weeks by state. If a woman's health is at risk, the state cannot force an abortion ban at any stage of development. That last sentence is key. A state cannot ban abortion at any stage of development if a woman's health is at risk. What Brown does not tell the reader, though, is that the Supreme Court has defined health so broadly that the exception swallows the rule. In Doe v. Bolton, the companion case to Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court explained that in determining whether an abortion is necessary to preserve the, quote, health of the mother, unquote, the physician's medical judgment may be exercised in light of all factors, physical, emotional, psychological, familial, and the woman's age, relevant to the well-being of the patient. All these factors may relate to health. Thus, while Brown creates the impression that post-viability abortions are illegal, except in those few rare cases where a woman's health is threatened, the law in reality says otherwise. So Brown is not alone in her portrayal of the health exception as narrow and rarely used rationale for late-term abortions. Abortion right activists deploy this tactic regularly, demanding health exceptions to any abortion legislation, knowing that virtually anything can qualify as health, and then when pro-life politicians object, they are portrayed as anti-woman. And the article goes on and on. So the point that I want to make there is, again, it's not simply about choice and bodily integrity. What they're saying is, even if you can create an artificial womb and you can remove the baby from me and the baby still lives, that's not good enough. Now, what that also points to is that many of these advocates, these authors of these blogs and articles have no idea what really goes on in the heart and mind of these women. You know, we see it every single day at Hope. We see a young lady walk in that doesn't know what to do, that is maybe scared or are struggling with a decision or being coerced by a family member or a boyfriend or fill in the blank. And they're just looking for some assistance. They're looking for help. My question to those that scream on all the rooftops and on every mountain they can find that abortion must continue. My question to them, I have a few questions. The first question is, you are able to scream from the rooftops because someone chose life for you. How is that? How do you not see the hypocrisy in that? How many pregnancy centers have you actually walked into? How many people have you actually reached out to instead of just reading what you read online about pregnancy center and what happened the last few weeks of calling us fake clinics? How much time have you spent with those females? How much time have you spent in those abortion rooms? Because I would bet that if you saw that happen, you might change your tune. You know, I'm not in favor of a lot of the graphic images and the pictures that are displayed at times to push and say, look what abortion is doing. That's not the path that I've decided to go down. But there is a reason why those that stand for abortion don't want to see those. They don't want to see them because it's truth, and at times truth can damage their narrative and cloud this utopian idea of, well, no, I can do what I want to with my body. And so the question here must be, because as we've talked on here, you know, today and at other times, we've said, well, there's no question that there's life in the womb. So now the question is, at what point do you as an individual have the right to take the life of another individual? Now, the answer to that should always be, at least 9 times out of 10, you never have the right. Now, some people would say, well, self-defense, somebody breaks into my home or my family's in danger. But in terms of just someone that is innocently there doing nothing, should you have the right to take that life? Now that's a debate that we need to have. Many of you that are hearing this are going to say, well, no, you shouldn't have the right. But there are people in our society that would certainly say you should have the right. So let's have that debate. The debate on whether or not it's a life is done. No more debating that. Not willing to continue that debate. That debate has been completed. And we know without a doubt, science knows without a doubt, that's a life. Now the question in the debate must go to, is it okay to then extinguish that life? We'll be back.
Oh, I know I'm on the rise again. Some sights on where I'm going, and my goodbyes to where I've been. Oh, I know I'm gonna rise again, singing farewell, king of the broken. So long, my friend.
We could. So as we look at the scientific advancement, the advancement in technology, when it comes to life, when it comes to pregnancy, when it comes to ultrasounds, why are those things important, and why do we spend so much time talking about the life narrative? Why do we spend the time doing these shows and the podcast and the blogging and the work that we do? Why have we been doing this for 20 years at Hope Resource Center? We do this because, yes, we are definitely passionate about the life issue. There's no question. We are passionate about seeing abortion ended in our day. But more than all of that, we are passionate because we care about people. Yeah, we care about the baby in the womb. I just spent the first two segments talking about the importance of the baby in the womb. As we talk about bodily integrity and autonomy, what about the integrity of that fetus? What about the autonomy of that fetus, of the baby in the womb? Who speaks for them? And so absolutely, I'm unashamed about my care for that child in the womb. But in the same breath, I am unashamed of my care for the mom carrying that child and the people involved. I don't take this lightly. I know that those are difficult circumstances and situations. And people are concerned about finances, and they're concerned about insurance, and they're concerned about drug addiction, and they're concerned about who the father is, and they're concerned about, will he stick around? They're concerned about what mama's going to think, and what dad's going to think, and what the church is going to think, and what schoolmates are going to think, and what their friends are going to think, what the community is going to think. So no, these are not easy decisions. These are not easy conversations. But the point of this show is to have those conversations. But it's not rational, and it's not honest to say that it's not life that's being affected there. It is intellectually inconsistent to say that there are no lasting effects of abortion. That's just not true. It's not. And I could point you to person after person in organizations that they are existing today, ministries and even secular organizations that exist today to help those that have had abortions. Now, why would those organizations and ministries exist today if there were no lasting effects? They exist because there are lasting effects. Now does that doesn't mean that you may come in contact with someone that says, look, I've had an abortion and I don't have any effect. Doesn't bother me. I don't think about it. Was the right decision? Sure, you're probably going to be able to run into those folks. But why is it when I go to speak and I see grown men, grown women come up to me with tears in their eyes because they're looking back 20, 30 years and saying, I had an abortion, or I drove someone to have an abortion 30 years ago. And I can see the anger. I can see the sadness. So don't tell me there's not lasting effects. That's why this is important. This is an important conversation. Not to mention the lasting effects where you had a child and now that child no longer exists. My wife is currently pregnant. About 15 weeks. There are places, 15, 16 weeks. There are places in this country where she could go have an abortion. For just about any reason. Are we okay with that as a society? And what I'm telling you is the polls, if you believe in the polls, are showing that society more and more is saying we're not okay with that. Now, why is that? Do you think it's because the gospel is impacting people? I think that's part of it, sure. But you look at studies done in the church and you see membership is declining. Church attendance is declining. So one may argue that the gospel, or at least God's people, the people that are supposed to be sharing that gospel, maybe it's not penetrating like we thought. That isn't God's fault, certainly not. It's just... So some could make that argument. Well, church numbers are declining, attendance is declining, membership's declining, baptisms are declining. So some may say, well, it's not the Bible that's changing people's mind. Well, what is changing people's mind? Why are the polls showing that more and more people are saying abortion is wrong? Well, I think it's because of the advancement in technology, along with the gospel, along with those conversations, along with political candidates speaking up, along with judges speaking up. along with rallies and the March for Life in Washington and all of these conversations, because people are beginning to say, look, I can go to Google and see quickly that's life in the womb. And for many, that was the only thing they needed to see. For many that said, look, that's not a life inside there, so abortion doesn't bother me. But if that is a life, then that changes the game. That changes everything. So there are some intellectually honest people in this society that have said, look, that's a life that changes everything. Why do you think yesterday, one of the major political parties in our country, who has historically not been pro-life, their campaign director came out and said, look, we're going to absolutely welcome Democrats that are pro-life. They will be able to run. There's not going to be a litmus test for them to run for office, whether they're pro-life or not. If they're pro-life, that's okay. Why do you think they're making that statement? They're making that statement because they're looking at the polls. The current head of the Democratic Party just a few months ago said, absolutely not. We will not get behind a candidate that is pro-life. You cannot have a D beside your name and be pro-life. Why the change of tune in just a few months? Because they've seen the numbers. They're reading the studies. And if you know anything about politics and political parties, what's their main goal? Their main goal is self-preservation. And so they're seeing the writing on the wall. So I would simply encourage you by saying the pendulum, it is starting to go in the right direction. Now, what are we going to do with it? Do we answer that by being hateful and angry and bitter? Absolutely not. We have conversations and we say, this is what we've known all along. Welcome. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to the debate. Let's have this now. It seems now, at least once a month or once every 2 months, there's another story that comes out that points to things changing. Whether it's a study done by a university, an article done by a secular person that claims to be a feminist, who wouldn't stand with us on anything, but is willing to report on a fetus being able to distinguish between languages. That's huge. And so now the goal must be for us is to be intellectually honest and have these conversations. And be willing to have these conversations. Be willing to hear someone else's viewpoint. That doesn't mean you agree with them. That doesn't mean you water down your viewpoint. It just means you're willing to listen when the opportunity presents itself. So when people ask me what I do, I'm able to say, I'm an executive director at a pregnancy center. Oh, what's a pregnancy center? Well, here's what we do. We offer free pregnancy tests, ultrasounds, STD testing and treatment, parenting classes, mentoring. And we offer all that for free. We don't take any taxpayer dollars. We're funded solely by the church, businesses, and individuals. And we've seen 25,000 patients since 1997. And we see 10 to 15 patients every single day. Oh, well, why do you do that without charging them? Because we don't want to create more obstacles for them. They've already had enough obstacles in their life. They've been given seconds and thirds their entire life. The last thing we want to do is then compound that and bring out more struggle. So we look at them and say, look, we're here for you. And we love you. And we love the baby that you're carrying. And we're going to do everything we can for you. Folks, that's a model that works. We don't do that simply to push a narrative. We do that because we love people. But it's amazing what loving people with a gospel focused, with a gospel focus, what that does. And what it does is it saves lives. We'll be back.
That's been there, the camel's back, slowly angry, whipped around. Be more hard and less of time.
So as we look at the model that is in place with pregnancy centers, and it is a model that is and has been making an impact since 1973 and beyond. And so when I tell you that the work being done there, it's the agenda of the pregnancy center was in reality the original safe space. It was the original, hey, we're going to create a place. We're going to create a place for young moms to come in, who need assistance. So what that means is when people come in our doors, whether they're abortion-minded or whether they're excited about their pregnancy or somewhere in between, they are all treated the exact same way. And if someone walks out of our doors and has an abortion, we follow up with them. And we don't judge them. We're not hateful with them when we follow up with them. We just say, look, if you need anything, we're here. We had a patient walk in the other day, late in the afternoon. It was almost closing time, and they came in and they asked for one of our volunteers. And that particular day, our volunteer wasn't there, and so we said, well, let's schedule you a time to meet with the volunteer. Now, this patient had already had her baby. She had already moved on. It's been a little bit of time, maybe a year since she had any of our services. But because of that connection with a volunteer, with her mentor, when she felt like I need to talk to somebody, where did she go? She went to Hope. She went to Hope. And it's because of that relationship that was formed that when she felt times were getting tough, she knew there was a place that she could call. She knew there was a place that she could go and somebody would be there to help her and talk to her. Or it's the young mom that's came to us before and said, you know, I went through all your classes. I had the baby shower. Everything was great. Well, my man kicked me and the baby out, and we have nothing. I don't know what else to do. Where'd she go? She came to us. So this isn't for us. This isn't about a political agenda. This isn't about secretly coercing people into making decisions that we believe are right or wrong. No, it's simply saying we have been put here for a purpose. And that purpose is to love as we are loved by Christ. And so what we're going to do is we are going to model that in our organization at Hope. At Hope Resource Center. And so that's what we're doing. And so we're coming in and we're being there for that young lady, for that young man, for that family. And we're able to do that because of people like you. So if you want to learn more about Hope, go to investinghope.com. If you want to become a partner and donate, investinghope.com, click on the blue donate button. We would love for you to join us in this work. We are certainly grateful for the past 20 years and look forward to many, many more because of your support, because of the support of the local church, because of the support of businesses. We have a number of things coming up. We have a pastor's breakfast on September 14th. So if you're listening today and you're a pastor and you want to learn more about that, give me an email, andrew@knoxvillehope.com. Just shoot me an email and I'll be able to answer your questions about that. If you're a golfer, we have a golf tournament coming up September 25th. We'd love for you to join us for that. We have a benefit concert coming up in December that I'm going to give you a lot of details for in the near future, but I don't want to give those out just yet. But a lot of things happening at Hope Resource Center, and we are grateful to stand with you and to partner with you. Let us know if there's anything we can do for you. Thanks for listening. Next week, I'll be joined by Dan Darling with the ERLC as we talk about the national conference that's coming up in Nashville in a couple weeks on Christ-centered parenting. We'll talk to you soon. Lift your
Salvation's waiting.